Well, welcome to the roundtable for January 24th. I know that some of you are already bitching about the music. That was Supertramp Dreamer. I thought that was appropriate for all those people that came up here, got all the free shit, now are on a plane going home. I thought that was an appropriate thing for tonight, especially given the fact that it's all happening right now, real time. And let me bring the boys on. Joined again by Mr. Bracken. Matt, it's good to see you again. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. You're on the five. One Fox on the five. Within a space of five minutes, they showed Guatemalans being loaded onto a Globemaster, and they called that a C-130. And 5 minutes later, they showed two Marine Ospreys at the border, and they called them C-130s. So the C-130 must be like the AK-47.
That's
like the military airplane they've heard of. Osprey and a Globemaster.
What I find funny about the whole thing is they were saying that this isn't the Marines' mission to guard the border. That's the military's mission to protect our borders. Hello. So yeah. That part was funny today too.
I still scream because the president on down, every time they talk about it, they just got to point to Article 4, Section 4. Defend the border is like black letter right in there. It's nothing vague like Article 14th Amendment under the jurisdiction of. It's guard the damn border. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's called the guarantee clause. Federal government guarantees the states will defend the border.
Yeah. And if the fact that they didn't for 4 years is dereliction of duty, which is treason. And it's finally being called out. So. Yeah, it's been an interesting week. Trump is moving fast. Yesterday before we get into the cartel stuff, because I know, Matt, you're going to have a lot to say about this, because I know I have a lot to say about it. But yesterday, watching Trump go to Davos and basically throw feces all over the room was fantastic.
Yes.
He basically went in there and just took a blowtorch to the entire green agenda.
Green new scam.
Oh my God.
And what about Bank of America? You got to start, stop kicking off conservatives.
Stop deplatforming conservatives. Well, like, called them out by
General
name.
Flynn, heavy hitters like General Flynn and Eric Prince were like, because apparently Bank of America put out some, you know, online statement about, we don't do that. And Flynn and Eric Prince and others like, were you effing liars? Mm-hmm. In the case of Eric Prince, not only was he debanked, his wife was debanked, all his siblings were debanked, his parents were debanked, even his ex-wife was debanked because he sends her child support payments. So they like did a complete gulag, you know, financial gulag on them. And the same thing with Flynn after losing his house and everything else.
And no explanation whatsoever. No explanation. Right. Just one day you're debanked. You have 21 days to get your money out. Oh, by the way, nobody else will let you bank with us. We'll bank with them either. That was, yeah. That went on from 2020 to now.
But that's a big reason for the whole BRICS push around the world, because Bank of America is just bringing it home, sort of like the GWAT. You develop social network tactics over in Kabul and in Baghdad for rounding up people, just based on AI and data mining, kind of like the way the Israelis are going after Hamas just by AI. Like, you seem like a Hamas guy. they just brought that home the same way. Like, we're going after the cartel's money. We're going after the terrorist money. They just brought that home. We're going after our political enemies' money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it starts overseas, just like the CIA. Then it just comes home.
Well, everything starts in the UK and then works its way here, goes to Canada first and then comes here. Because Canada did it during the trucker protests and deplatformed a bunch of people, literally downright just stole their money.
You know, most people have no idea who, you know, what actually are the levers that run the world. Most people have never heard of the Senior Executive Service, for example. And most people have no idea that the City of London and the metropolitan area of London are not the same thing.
No.
If you ask 100 Americans, what is the City of London? They say, oh, that's that big place with Big Ben and, you know, London Bridge. It's not.
No.
But they have their own rules.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, they do. And isn't there some weird rule where the king has to come and do something with the mayor? Like every year, it's like a ritual they have to do with the mayor.
Like little gilded carriages.
Yeah.
And this gets murky also. There are little islands like in the English Channel and off of Canada that nobody ever heard of that are technically like, well, that's not actually part of Canada. That belongs to the such and such bank going back to the Hudson Bay Colony. So they have like a special like virtual bank on that little island.
Is that the Isle of Man, or is there a different one? There's one between France and England that's like,
yes, but they're sprinkled here and there. I mean, they just have their own little carve outs.
And they date back to pre-Revolutionary War.
Oh, sure. And they were probably old then.
Oh yeah. So for the sake of time, because I want to try and keep this on to an hour. I wanted to talk through Trump declaring the cartels as terrorist organizations, because I think that was probably one of the most decisive moves he could have made. It creates a whole host of problems, creates a whole, I'm just going to say, a new set of security issues that we're going to have to deal with. And deploying 1,500 troops to the border is basically, you know, sending down a squad of men to take the entire 1,000-mile perimeter in Ukraine, which is not real. But I think it's just the start of deployment. And then today he said he was bringing back 20,000 troops from Europe, meaning he's pulling out all the troops from Poland and bringing them back home. And I would have rather imagine that he's bringing them back home so he could deploy them to the border.
Well, go after the cartel. I think there's push pull all over the place. We have troops in Ukraine. Some are sheep dipped as contractors or former or retired. Some are active duty, where they cut special orders that, you know, are deniable. But we have troops in Ukraine, at least in a training capacity and running radar sites, things like that. So I think he's pulling them out also. When you say pulling troops out of Poland, that's like wink, wink, Ukraine.
Yeah.
And when these guys get blown up in a hotel in Poland, in Ukraine, a week later they had a car accident in Scotland for the purposes of their wife. Because the wife's used to not hearing from him anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that business better than anybody. So that we have orders to go somewhere we're not supposed to be, and we're never going to be there, even though we could get killed there. We'll be buried in some other country at some other time.
Back in the El Salvador times, and SEALs who were Spanish-speaking, native Spanish speakers that could blend, would get orders to Washington, some kind of a staff position in Washington, but they were really going to El Salvador. And there was an interesting episode in the war against the drug barons. It kind of relates to today, maybe. The drug cartels in Colombia and Bolivia and Peru, where we had SEALs that got out and joined the Coast Guard. Okay. They transferred to the Coast Guard because there had been congressional findings, et cetera, that as long as it was a law enforcement mission, you couldn't have military in South America fighting alongside Colombian or Peruvian or Bolivian troops, but Coast Guard could, because they were law enforcement. So SEALs suddenly became Coast Guard for purposes of the paperwork.
Yeah. Funny how that always
works. That way they're riding up the river, you know, with miniguns, but they're in the Coast Guard.
Yeah, that's funny. I saw a lot of that in Afghanistan, in both Iraq and Afghanistan, which is funny.
We'll see that in Mexico in spades, but I think it's like time to seize the nettle and get this thing over with, because the alternative, and I've been following some of the discussions on X and elsewhere, are like, just knuckle under, accept the fentanyl, accept the illegal aliens, don't piss off the cartels or it'll be a bloodbath. Well, I say, let's get it on. You know, if that means we put a 50-foot wall across the border with armed soldiers behind it, that works. If Mexico's tourism dies, I don't care. Mexico and China built this super port. I forget where it is on the Pacific, but a super port with a super highway to like Nuevo Laredo, then to Laredo, then straight up. I think it's the I-35 Carter takes you to like Minnesota.
Takes you to Minnesota, and then there's one that goes all the way up to Seattle, because the Sinaloa cartels are all over the place in Washington and Canada.
If that means we shut down trade with Mexico, and we're like, you know, sending drones, because they're going to send their drones in, plus they've already got fighters in this country. When this bloodbath happens, Americans are going to get so pissed that they're going to say, I don't care if your grandmother is on her deathbed, we're deporting her ass. You know, it's going to make Americans very harsh. So Americans won't be able to go to Mexico for tourism. Boo-hoo. I don't care.
Well, Matt, let me stop you there.
Avocados will cost more. Boo-hoo.
By the way, before I ask you this question, I have to say that I still go back to that post you did after that gal was set on fire on that subway train.
Yeah.
A few people burning her. Are okay as long as the price of avocados don't go.
Yeah, that's right. So
I still laugh about that.
Yeah, and it's going to hit home, because it's going to be very complicated, because the border has been so obscured over the last, you know, really like 30, 40 years. So many of the now ranking judges, state and federal congressmen, they belonged to a group called MECHA when they were in high school and college, which is the student movement for Aztlan. And their symbol is like a Thunderbird looking kind of Aztec version of a Thunderbird. And it's holding an Aztec head chopper, one of those swords with the obsidian on it. It's holding an Aztec head chopper in one hand and a lit stick of dynamite in the other claws. Okay. And the play on words in Spanish is that mecha means both match and fuse, like a matchlock gun. So a match in Spanish is a fuse and a match. So mecha is a lit fuse dynamite bomb. That's literally the logo of the main student group. Afterwards, they get cleaned up. They join La Raza. But when they're radicalized in high school and college, and there are chapters of this in every high school and college across the Southwest for the last 40 years. So now you've got a whole generation of judges, politicians, mayors, sheriffs that secretly are on the side of not America. I won't say they're trying to return Arizona to Mexico. It's not that at all, but they're definitely anti-American. And this makes them and greedy gringos and everybody else very susceptible to corruption, extremely susceptible. Half of the Border Patrol is Hispanic. And I, in my opinion, a lot of them join for the graft, because once you're clearing trucks at a stop and you're known to be corrupt, you know, they try to tamp it down by switching partners or you don't know what lane you're going to be in. But it's easy enough, you know, with cell phones now to just say, hey, I'm on duty from 11 till 7 and I'm in lane 21. Right. Yep. And they know who you are. So they send the vehicles full of drugs and aliens to you. And for that, you make, you know, you make your monthly salary every day that you left shipments through. That's why you have all these tunnels that are found. You know, the guy at the other end of the tunnel is making a fortune.
Well, don't forget Mesa Gateway and the other ports of entry that they've created for air travel. So now they're bringing them in. They're bringing them in directly to the U.S. without custom oversight. That was created by, you know, McCarthy and Paul Ryan and a few others. And I think it goes all the way back to McCain. So we also have those airport of entries. And the hard part especially for Honan's, his job is going to be really hard. He's got to go through and weed out all the cartel-owned Border Patrol agents. Then he's got to get rid of all the DEI candidates. Then he's got to get rid of all the communists. And then he's got to restaff it and, you know, entice.
And that's almost, that's virtually impossible to do in, like, you know, less than 100 years. And by then, more guys are coming out of the Border Patrol Academy that are corrupt to take the places of the ones that you've weeded out. So eventually, I think something like what happened in the 80s, there was a DEA agent named Kiki, like K-I-K-I, Kiki Camarena. And he was kidnapped in Mexico. He had authority to, like, carry a pistol. But there he is, like, in a restaurant meeting people. He's dragged out of the restaurants, out of the restaurant, kidnapped. This was under Reagan. And then they finally put a lot of pressure on Mexico to return his body and, you know, come up with some answers about what happened to him. Well, the way that they put the pressure on Mexico was they said, we're going to inspect the vehicles by the letter of the law at every port of entry until, like, we get satisfaction. And, you know, within a day, there's like a 100-mile line of avocado trucks extending back into Mexico, which was unsustainable for Mexico. We have the pressure. You just literally close the whole border, all the border crossings. You just close it. And it's like putting your knee on George Floyd's neck. I mean,
oh yeah. And I think Trump will do it too. Cause Trump, he wants that. He's that committed to stopping the flow of drugs.
He's ready to do that.
And no, yeah,
he's ready to do that. And it'll come to that. When they finally applied more pressure to Mexico, somebody surfaced a videotape of Kiki Camarena's torture sessions. And there were active duty Mexican generals in the room with the cartels. Mm-hmm. So there are two excellent movies to watch. One is Sicario, everybody has seen. Another one is with Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones, also with Benicio del Toro, who's very young, called Traffic. And the corruption in the Mexican military and police is, it's almost like a marbled ribeye steak. You know, where does the gangster stop and the general begin? I was in Honduras, and there was a joke that in south of the border, the rank structure for officers is a lieutenant, captain, major, colonel, general, millionaire. Okay, so you know you get the stars on your shoulder, and then you can just create phantom battalions, right? Make actually be just protection for cartels landing airplanes. You know, that's so Mexico is just unalterably corrupt. And when we have this fight with them, when we're sending special operations forces down there or doing hellfire strikes on their compounds, they're going to retaliate inside of America. And the problem for people that think it would be simple, like there's some, you know, big cartel base and you just drop enough hellfires on it, the stuff is extremely dispersed, extremely. See, the precursor chemicals are what's coming in from China. And so these are things that you can't buy in the United States by the 50-gallon drum. The fentanyl precursors. Fentanyl is just a chemical cocktail, you know, made in a makeshift lab. But in the United States, you just can't buy this stuff by the 50-gallon barrel. But you can in China. You can buy it by the shipload. It goes into Mexico, but it doesn't go to like one giant fentanyl factory where you take that out and you solve the problem. You know, it's in 100 small factories hidden in warehouses and garages that can be moved around all the time.
And let's keep something in mind too. The cartels are interspersed throughout the government and local governments throughout Mexico. So it's a narco state. So everybody's complicit all the way down the road, but there's also Chinese regulars on the ground there too. So when things do kick off, I imagine the cartels are going to get some toys from the Chinese and the Russians to help, you know, bog us down on the border while they're doing whatever they're doing. And
if this is going to kick off, I'm glad it's while Trump is in office, because there's going to be a major suspension of quote unquote civil rights. I don't know why I said quote unquote. I'll take off the air quotes. There's going to be a major suspension of civil rights when they declare these cartels to be terrorist organizations and just start, you know, black bagging these guys inside of CONUS and inside of Mexico. Now, if it was the Democrats in charge, or after Trump is gone and Democrats come back in charge, they'll use the same laws like Patriot Act, you know, squared, to go after Americans, blackbagging Americans. But for now, you know, I'm ready to have the fight with the cartels in Mexico. If that means nobody crosses the border, fine with me.
Exactly. Yeah, can I make a point? Made me think of. You know, I was thinking about the second or third order effects here. You know, a couple great things. It's like if you start a war with the cartels, one, you can bring all the military back and use them to defend the border. So you get, you know, American forces out of the Middle East and out of Europe. And so that it makes it harder for the globalists, Zionists, whatever you want to call them, to get us in more wars all around, because we're already committed with homeland defense for real now. The other thing I see is that, like you kind of alluded to there, Matt, is that it instantly closes the border. As soon as it's a war zone, no more people are going to be trying to sneak across a war zone, you know, unless they're part of the war somehow, I would expect. Sure. So you instantly solve that problem. And the side, Benny, of all of this is, maybe we actually force Mexico to change to be a better country for its own citizens.
I think they have to go through a revolution on their own. Because remember, you're talking about, you know, the better part of 70 years of having the cartels operate throughout Mexico and throughout Central America. So you're not going to change that culture overnight. That culture is going to take
decades. A bigger problem, you know, Colombia went through this in like the 70s and 80s. You know, the Cali cartel and Pablo Escobar and all of that, Scarface. But compared to Mexico, Colombia is culturally more European. There's an Afro-Caribbean, you know, angle, but it's more European. I mean, the people in charge are more European. Mexico is, you know, underneath the veneer of the Europeans, like, you know, Vicente Fox, like 6'5", blue-eyed, you know, not a Mexican drop of blood, straight from Castilian Spanish. But when you go just one level down, we're talking Aztecs. And, you know, that's why their Halloween is Day of the Dead. That's why they, you know, they revel in all the skeletons and beheading people, burning people, throwing them off of bridges, hanging them from bridges. They are a bloodthirsty people. I'm sorry, culturally. You know, they have a veneer of Catholicism, obviously. Many devout Catholics, obviously. But the Aztec blood runs deep there. And they are head choppers from day one. They're heart cutters. That's who they are.
Yeah, and that's not an exaggeration either. If you look at some of what the cartels have been doing for years to people, you can make the leap. They're probably the most violent group that we'll face for a lot of reasons, right? Because there's no Geneva Convention there. So once these kick off, don't be surprised if you see American soldiers being tortured and killed on YouTube for sport, because that's how these guys operate. And, you know, the danger in this is that we go into this half-assed, and we don't go into this with resolve to destroy any operations or any movement across the border by the cartels and then destroy all of the U.S. operating, you know, capabilities, which, you know, you're rooting a needle out of a haystack in most of the big cities where the cartels are, because they pay people to watch, you know, to stand guard. They pay people to monitor phones. They pay people to monitor social media. They have a very, very sophisticated and well-oiled machine for surveillance within any community. So you start rolling black SUVs in there, military vehicles, they're going to know, and they're going to be out of the area before you even get established.
In Mexico or in El Paso?
Both.
Well, you know, the soldiers on their side, they have that "I'm already dead" attitude, and don't expect to live to see 30.
Yep.
So this is one of the reasons, like MS-13, they're heavily into gang tattoos. The gang tattoos serve a couple of purposes, including, like, once you're jumped into our gang, you're never leaving alive, right? You're either going to prison or you're going to be dead. And there's no going back to a regular, normal life after this. Well, from our, that's fine inside of Mexico and inside of American cities with, you know, big populations of them. But when it comes to separating the sheep from the goats, you know, we're going to see off-duty policemen using their information that they got from federal and official police sources. And they're just going to be saying, I know where there's a nest of these guys, and they'll go in at midnight and shoot them all. And it'll be similar in some respects to the Mau Mau wars that the British fought against the Kenyan terrorist guerrillas in the 50s, where you do, that's where the original, like, kind of like false flag guerrilla war came from. I forget the name of the British officer. He was later in charge of Northern Ireland, and it really blew up spectacularly because the tactics that worked brilliantly in Kenya absolutely just riled the Northern Irish Catholics up for blood. So in Kenya, they would have a tribal gang wiped out, but clues would be left that it was done by one of their competitive other tribe gangs. And it's actually, you know, British in blackface, literally in blackface, with, you know, loyal local troops, but they were getting the gangs to fight each other instead of the British. And that kind of tactic will work well in a you know, Mexican or Southwest America scenario, where you go into a gang house, kill everybody, and, you know, like Robert Duvall in Apocalypse Now, throwing down the death cards. You know, you throw down the cards of the other gang. And yep. You use a lot of psyops. You use, you know, infiltrate communications channels, take them over, like QAnon, take them over, and then start broadcasting messages that will cause confusion and doubt between groups. You know, we're setting ourselves up for a dirty war, in other words. But the alternative is just, oh, well, allow a tolerable 100,000, 200,000 deaths of fentanyl poisoning. And I don't call it a drug anymore. It's definitely a poison. You know, a pill of fentanyl kills you. If it's sprinkled on pot or put, you know, put into a, you know, fake party drug and you get the formula right, okay, but little too much, what's the saying? One pill can kill. It's poison.
Yep.
It comes from China. It goes through Mexico and kills Americans.
And we can't discount that China will be involved and provide them with assistance, both on the hacking side, as well as on the intel side and on the SIGINT side. So I fully well anticipate that China will be as deeply embedded with the cartels in some way, shape, or form, or at least Chinese intelligence will be, so that they have good situational awareness no matter what they're doing.
Yeah, communications and psyops. This is like brush beater 101.
Yeah.
And he's not here to beat the drum, so I will. All of the kinetic black ops, all the jumping out of helicopters and dropping hellfires, that's all downstream of winning or losing the communication battle from the local tactical up to the, you know, international level. Yep. Whoever wins the communication space is going to be able to shape the battlefield and be effective. And whoever loses the communications battle space is going to be dropping missiles on friendlies.
Yep. And the other thing we can't discount is we can't discount the fact that the agencies will be working against Trump and the administration while this is all going on. So we may have troops on the ground that are getting bad intel. 100%. I mean, Raul, you can talk to this better than I can. I'll let you say some of that intelligence shit, will you?
Yeah. So when you talk about organization on the ground and what's going to be happening, there's going to be a union of the military and the Border Patrol, and use of the overhead balloons and the overhead UAV assets that are going to be collecting data. They've already been collecting data. I mean, they collect data every day. They use a system called Minotaur. Minotaur allows for target tracking to be passed from node to node, sensor to sensor to any user on the ground, and allows them to pass and track and maintain custody, you know, from sector to sector, water to land, land to water, air to land. And it's a powerful system that allows everybody to know who's doing what. And that system is going to provide that situational awareness and that ground, both blue and red plotting, for all the assets that are running to the border now. And there's a lot going on. They are scrambling, they're mobilizing units, they're following Trump's order, you know, to go protect the border, and they're doing it. They're going to be rolling. So all that stuff's going to start happening quickly. But Matt, I think you got it right, and that is they better start thinking this forward in terms of the IO campaign. They got to start thinking this forward in terms of controlling the media, because those idiots are going to show up, you know, with their freaking cameras on the border or cameras in the water like they've done before when the leaks go out and start exposing what's going on. And you're right. If we don't strategically know and move quickly, their early warning system throughout their networks is going to let everybody know where we are and what we're doing.
And
so that's got to be attacked first.
We just saw with the red note thing with idiot, even officer pilots taking pictures of their aircraft inside and out, putting it up on red note. I don't know how you're going to do this in 2025, but I think you're going to have to take everybody's cell phones away from them. That whole Marine company is going to have like one cell phone, and that's for the colonel.
Oh, yeah. We were doing that when we deployed. We confiscated everything. It's like nothing goes overseas. Sorry.
Finding anything that emits.
Anything that transmits.
Anything that or can be even pinged to transmit is going to be
right.
A like court-martial offense.
It should be court-martial offense. That's correct. And because you are exposing your own troops. Yeah. You know, it's like setting off a, you know, a green star cluster above your formation.
And it's, well, it's, let me add this for the audience that's non-military. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, why would you take their cell phones away? Operational security is going to be the key to everything that happens on the border, because the cartels have eyes and ears everywhere. They have thousands of people that they can throw at an area to surveil an area. And the last thing you need is, and by the way, you should never underestimate the average Joe soldier's, you know, desire to reach mama back home and tell her what they're doing. And that in and of itself was the biggest Achilles heel we had in the desert, was the fact that we would go and do an operation and Joe Snuffy would be taking pictures with his cell phone and sending them back. And where we'd have combat photographers taking pictures of you know, very specific things that gave the enemy a huge clue into how to take out our vehicles. That's going to be paramount, if not tantamount to us winning, is being able to restrict the amount of information that's going on social media. And,
you know, even this is like 4 or 5 years ago, I saw on the internet an example of software that the feds have probably got something 10 times better by now, where you can zoom in and zoom out like one equivalent of a Google Maps to a beach during spring break where there's 10,000 people in one, you know, zip code of beach. And you can zoom down to like, you know, 100, a small grid square, a tenth of a grid square, isolate all the cell phones in that area, and then follow them 10 different ways for the next month or year. Like all the people that are meeting in a certain town, the computer will tell you if there's any of those people meet again somewhere else without humans needing to watch it. So
no, that's correct. And it's the assumption and it's the association piece, right? So if Matt and I go to a meeting in Southern Florida, and then we both get on a plane and go somewhere else, and a week later we both show up in San Diego, they're going to track that. They're going to track that these two people are associated. And then what they'll do is they'll start building a communication network. Who do we talk to? And then they'll build a communication off of that, and they'll find out who's talking the most.
And they'll label that
as a critical node.
That's right? Without the need for humans watching it.
Yeah, it's there's no humans stored. Watching.
The data is searchable from 10 directions to infinity.
Yep. The other thing people need to understand is that they can go pull this up. This is a document. You can go get it. It's joint publication 3TAC 13. And that publication talks to you in depth about how you perform the influence and operation in information operation. And that's part of what we're talking about with this network, right? Where's the information going? Who's talking to who? What's being passed? And part of that is I can use that if I send out a message to somebody in a cartel and I know their node, and then I find out what their node is talking to, and I realize that they're passing the message that I planted in them. We're sending 10,000 troops to the southern, Big Bend, Texas, right? And so I plant that seed, and then I watch it as it transmits itself through their network. Number one, I know where that message is going. Number two, I start to plot their network. So because I know that message, I know what that message looks like, I know what that message feels like, and I can now track that message through their network. And now I can start plotting who they are, just like Matt said. I can start plotting exactly where the hell they are, who's with them, how many are with them, right? What their sizes are, what their thing is. And if you do not think they are doing that to us, you're wrong.
That's right. Because this works both ways. It's like the old, they would use a comparison of like submarines versus depth charges. What depth are you going to? Second level thinking. We used to always consider that we had air dominance and electronic warfare dominance. It's clear now in Ukraine, Russia is equal to us in electronic warfare. We're better, and in synchronizing fires, better than us, and in air defenses, way better than us. You know, whether their best aircraft can beat our best aircraft in armed combat over the Mojave Desert is almost like saying, you know, is Sir Lancelot a better jouster than the Black Knight? Who gives a shit? That's not where it's at anymore. You know, you're talking about a 1,000-mile front in Ukraine or Mexico with complete electronic warfare. And if our guys assume that they have the electronic warfare high ground and the SIGINT high ground, we can be very susceptible to being played by an even more sophisticated enemy that reads everything that we're doing, understands the tactic, and then feeds bullshit back to us. So the 10,000 people we think are moving to the Big Bend can be completely made up. You know, these kind of things are all happening in Ukraine, you know, for the last 2 years. So,
well,
if you can't win the electronic warfare game, you're not going to win air dominance, and you're not going to win the ground game.
Right. And let's go back to what you said about the Chinese. The Chinese would love to support them because they will learn so much stuff from us, because we're going to be stupid enough to broadcast and transmit and let them collect. If we're not smart in terms of making sure that every soldier down to every Bubba on the ground knows this is the thing we're up against, you can't do it. You can't send pictures. You can't call home. You can't do any of that.
Well, this is going to be a major morale hit, because this is like taking heroin away from junkies to say, before you get on the airplane, drop your smartphone in this basket.
I was just going to say that.
That's like taking heroin away from a junkie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
take a fucking cell phone away from a 15-year-old. They'll lose their goddamn mind.
And how about 100 of them? How about 100 of them out in the desert?
Yeah, exactly. Female. What if I take 10,000 of them away and now I got, you know, troops that a lot of them don't even know how to read a freaking map because they thought Google was going to tell them where to go?
It's going to be
operational. If we don't have good commanders that are countering this, we got a problem.
It's already going to be operationally necessarily anyway, because there's a great video. I don't know where I found it. Somebody in a local signal group to where I live sent me today of the Brax guy. Have you ever guys ever watched him on YouTube? He's all about
security.
Talks about encryption.
Yeah. Well, he did a really deep 20-minute talk about the new iPhone 16 and also the Google phones that are, they're basically incorporating AI, and they're trying to turn AI to where it's going to be like your constant co-pilot, your constant companion, where this phone is going to basically have built in key tracking, everything. The AI is going to be looking at everything, single thing you do. Yeah. So that even not only on the emitting side, it's going to be even more available, because everything is going to be going through Apple or whoever, Google, and there'll be no security whatsoever of any kind. I mean, not for anyone.
It'll be.
Don't worry. Ellison is going to develop, you know, mRNA technologies that you put it into your bloodstream,
just for you. We'll go down a tangerial and a rabbit hole.
No. You have to think about the danger of this, because when it starts talking to you, when your body starts talking to your phone automatically, right? Now you have a problem. Now when you say, hey, if I take the phone away from them, they're like kids losing their heroin, this will be worse, because their dependency is going to go right in the toilet, right? Well, and they'll be absolutely unusable.
You know, I grew up before smartphones. So, you know, for the non-boomers out there in the audience, to get across a major American city like Baltimore, you had to figure out bus schedules, and there was no internet, right? So you had to like somewhere collect a paper artifact that showed schedules and routes, and you had to figure out, mostly in your head with very primitive two-dimensional paper artifacts, what bus connected to what bus and when you could be there. When was the last bus? Because if you're caught in the ghetto after the last bus, you may never be seen again, okay? For sure. So all of this was going on inside of our own minds. There was only a 2D route thing with lines and numbers. You had to picture, what does Baltimore look like from above? If I was a bird over top of Baltimore, that roadmap is in my head. Children today do not develop that architecture whatsoever, because a happy lady on a screen tells them turn right in 100 feet. And it's completely different we grew up throwing balls at each other. So if we went outside and, you know, somebody threw a football to you, you caught it because you had practice from toddler on up. Now that brain development is going into getting to the next level on a computer game, which is fantastic if you're just living in a virtual world. But when you go outside and somebody throws a football at your head, it just hits you in the head because you never grew up from a toddler playing catch at all. Extrapolate that to a soldier in the field. They are literally looking for a screen that says, where's the enemy? Which way should I point my rifle?
Right.
They've never been hunting. They've never been camping. They live in a virtual world. You put 100 of them on an airplane to send them to the border with no smartphones, half of them will go AWOL. They'll be combat ineffective because it will literally be like taking 100 heroin addicts and removing them from heroin at the same time.
Yeah, and if we
and maybe worse, that, maybe worse because they can't function. You know, can't after function. The DTs, the heroin addict can, is at least in the real world. Like, yeah. How do I rob? How do I steal? Right,
no, they go through the DTs. Trust me, it's this was got it done so many.
But they're street savvy. A junkie is street savvy. Don't mug that guy; he'll kill you. Mug that guy; it's easy money. Steal from that store. Don't steal from that store; they'll shoot you. Modern soldier has no street savvy. A female voice on a screen has told him what to do since he was in kindergarten.
Yep. And if
that company commander, right, gets taken out because he's the only one with a transmitter, and that's the transmitter that gets taken out, right? What are all the junior leaders capable of doing? Have we trained them to handle that? Or are we still in the GWAT mentality, right?
Not even close. Come on, man. They're going to be trying to figure out which pronouns to use on the radio if the captain
in a dirty war that's blending, but in a dirty cartel war that's both in Mexico and in mostly Southwest, but all over America. We make fun of the guy from Haiti that's like killing a duck. But at least he knows how to kill, pluck, gut, cook, eat a duck right from the pond. Okay. Your average 22-year-old American, if there's no microwave, will starve. You know, so it's sort of analogous to they can drink from a ditch because they've been drinking from a ditch in Haiti and Guatemala. So when the grid goes down and the water's not purified and we're all drinking from ditches, they'll still be carrying on while we've all got, you know, dysentery and typhus. So the same way, extend that to tactics. Without their smartphones, our privates are useless. They never developed street smarts. And the guy from, you know, ghettos of Mexican urban areas, he has street smarts to the nth degree. When to hide, when to fight, when to ambush, when to group up, when to disperse. He's just got that as part of his basic. So we can say he's dumb, he's, you know, scrawny, but he's a survivor just to get to where he is.
And I think, I think I know how we get around this. I mean, I've been thinking about this while you guys have been talking, and this, I put it in our notes, but like the idea popped in my head. It's like, if you're going to have a civil war or something like it, you want to pick the kind of war you want to have. You don't want the enemy to choose the war. And in a way, another kind of level of the thought I see with the Trump's strategy here, I don't know if he's thinking of this or not, but is that if we can force a war with the cartels, in a way, it forces the enemy to come out in the open. It forces them to start fighting a war, like, legitimately, and that will make it much easier in terms of targeting, and also would serve to unify Americans, and it will also force people on the left that have been undermining our country, they're going to have to pick sides.
Well, when you say force them to fight legitimately, you don't mean like line up like redcoats. You mean terrorism, kidnapping, bombings.
Well, yes, that'll be part of it. That will be part of it. But because it will force, because of the status of them now being terrorists, and we start to focus the whole DOD and government on them as an adversary, a lot of their capabilities are going to be visible and open. And the only reason they exist and are able to flourish right now is because they don't have any adversary in Mexico that's capable, other than other cartels, that's capable of doing anything to them. So It forces it into like a man-on-man fight where it's like, instead of you coming and constantly attacking me from the back with, you know, whoever, you've got to now have more of a man-on-man. Sure.
And attacking us through judges making rulings in favor of illegals.
Right.
And so forth.
Breaks all that
down. You dig into these judges, they're either bribed or they used to be in Mecha.
Because how many judges are going to be able to stand up and say, oh, you know, I'm for the cartels after the cartels just did like mass attacks all over the country? It's going to be politically infeasible for a lot of people that have supported the cartels to do that once we're in a true
state. It'll be, it's good. I haven't recommended this in a while, but I would recommend, and you can read it fast. You don't have to like study every name because there's a million. The Dirty War by Martin Dillon about the troubles in Northern Ireland, because this kind of a dirty war, right? There's some analogies to a war with Mexico over the cartels. It takes place in north and south of a border. So there's like sanctuary aspects and political protection aspects. That you have like a political party, Sinn Féin, then you have various IRA provisional official, which is more communist. Then you've got the SAS and various British reconnaissance units, regular army units. False flag operations were super common. So you have a judge that's always releasing cartel members. He might get killed, but he'll be killed by somebody to make it look like one of your other enemies killed him. This was so common. When you unweave all of these bombings and shootings in Northern Ireland, a high percentage of them were false flag. Bombs planted by the SAS or surrogates, Ulster Constabulary Force, and then Ulster Defense League, things like that, Ulster Defense Force. So you put a bomb in a friendly bar, but maybe not really that friendly, sort of like not the other faction of your side. You put a bomb in the other bar, so it doesn't really hurt your faction. It hurts your competitive faction, but you blame it on your common enemy. That kind of thing will be happening.
That happened in Bosnia. When I was in Bosnia, but the Muslims bombed the Bosniaks in their market. No, they bombed their own market. That's what they did. Right. They mortared their own market and blamed the Bosniaks. And everybody went violent against the Bosniaks. The good thing was is that I was working on Shinseki's staff at the time. And being an artilleryman, I said, wait a minute, we got a counter-battery radar up on a hill. Let's get the data from it.
Right.
Let's find out what really happened. And we backtraced it to the Muslims and were able to prove they bombed themselves, to restart the war.
Right, to get NATO to come in because it was another atrocity. They also can do crater analysis, depending on what the mortar shell lands in, brick or cobblestone or dirt, a sidewalk. Experts can analyze the crater to determine the direction the mortar shell came in and then correlate it with the radar and get a pretty close picture.
Yeah, I did the same thing with the chem bombings in Syria. I got a whole paper on that.
One thing that we can't forget here is that we also have other foreign fighters in this country right now. So it's not just going to be the cartels. And Vandersteel, by the way, Magisterium is the one that posted this. She just posted a warning that the cartels are actually distributing guns. Who knows if that's true? But this fits your Connex theory, Matt, that they've got Connexes.
The 20-foot Connex, not the 40-foot, the 20-foot.
Right,
because you can tip it off. You tip it off just like it's a dumpster, anywhere.
Yep, and they're all over the country.
And, you mentioned Syria. It's been back and forth, denied, it doesn't exist, Havana syndrome. I know for a fact there are directed energy weapons that are man portable, and both sides are using them. We have had generals who developed like super rapid cancer. Like he's healthy, a year later he's got cancer. He was in Syria, and two generals that were standing next to each other on the tarmac both got cancer 3 months later. After being in the hospital for a week, So these directed energy weapons. It's sort of like, think of it as a sniper rifle with a fairly good range that's sort of deniable. So we've used it to take out Iranian rocket teams, for example, in Syria. They're getting ready to set up a rocket. We see it. We don't want to drop a hellfire on them necessarily, if depending on where they're setting it up and who they are. And you don't want to, sometimes you want to take people out, but without blowing their head off. And so there's a gray area now, these directed energy weapons. If you have a vehicle, you can mount it in a vehicle. It's even more powerful. But it, the man portable ones would require a small, like two or three man team at this point for the power sources, et cetera. But yes, there's like, you know, the directed energy that will not kill, but will cripple on the spot. It's like microwaving somebody at a distance. And then they're going to have the neurological effects and supposedly like rapid cancer, depending on what you hit them with, at what range, for how long. But in this kind of a dirty war, both sides are going to have access to this kind of technology. This is not like, oh, America has night vision and the Viet Cong don't have shit. No, everybody's got everything now. You know, anything we can make, the Chinese can make.
And they'll replenish the supplies of the cartels in the field. They will absolutely do that.
And some of this stuff can be made in country.
Just a box of 100 green laser pointers, right, are going to, you know, disable our pilots and probably take out all the sensors in the airborne.
Yeah, and they were using them in Portland against the federal building, and I got a pair of they have like red sunglasses for the green lasers. The problem is that you can't see shit, right? It's like wearing dark glasses at night. So, you know, Bruce can speak to the green laser threat if he's still on. But yeah, if you are wearing, you got a choice. Do I not see shit because I'm wearing dark red glasses? Or do I not protect my eyes and get my eyeballs burned out by a green laser?
I've been lased a couple times flying, but it's never been bad enough. The key is learning to turn away. You have to learn to turn your eyes away right away as soon as you detect like a light. The problem is your head wants to turn and look at it because it attracts your eye when you see it. But as soon as you realize, dude, it's a laser, you got to look. And most guys that have been flying for a long time know that, you know, have that. They may look, you might look briefly, but then you know that look away. And usually what I would do is lower my seat so I can get out of the field of view of, we can raise and lower our seats in the airplane. So, but it's a common problem. It's been for decades, for years, been an issue.
I think there were some Coast Guard pilots that were lased in California, the West Coast, like a Chinese ship was leaving and they were flying, like the Chinese were like, oh, you're taking pictures of us too low. And they lased the pilots. And I think these pilots actually like lost flight status. You know, it damaged them badly. Cause you know, the stuff that civilians can buy in America legally, then you've got Chinese companies that will just send it to you in a box that says, Mommy's cookies, right? All kind of drugs come in from China because it's not inspected, because it's in, you know, a box of tools could have a box of whatever. So they can sell lasers that are definitely fatal to be shined in your eyes. And in a dirty war, 21st century dirty war, I expect directed energy weapons, because, you know, you want to take a general off the field, but you don't want to shoot his head off. Or you just want to blind a pilot or blind the battalion commander.
Yeah. Disable. Yeah. Disable. Yeah. So the thing that we started with was the information war. And I think that's going to be critical to a lot of this. And I think that, I don't know what Trump's going to do about the mainstream media, but he's going to have to do something about him, because there's no way we'll be successful at the border if they're spreading lies and creating disinformation and spreading that across U.S. cities. Because U.S. cities are already a powder keg right now, considering all the rhetoric that's been pushed out. Imagine, you know, an ISIS been rolling people up. Just imagine what it's going to be like when the press is like jumping all over the fact that a border town got bombed and, you know, some kids got killed, et cetera. They're going to have a field day with that.
Matt, so speaking of that, what is the media, and we know who controls the media, We also know that there's a lot of the same Black Hat membership that's now in the new administration. For some reason, we just can't get away from that. And they've got control of most of the tech corporations. What are they going to do when we start going kinetic? I mean, to me, I'm afraid that these idiots are actually going to fight against us.
Well, there's you know, the enemy within kind of thing, but just think about how vulnerable we are. We are we live like we're in a high trust society where our infrastructure just like runs above and just below ground. And you can find fiber optic trunks, gas pipelines, everything is like online. So you don't accidentally dig it up with your backhoe. So our enemies can just as easily use that to dig up gas pipelines, blow them up. We saw what happened with California. Just wait for good Santa Ana and send 10 guys out with boxes of road flares. You could set California on fire from San Francisco to the border. And I expect things like that to happen. You know, if we're really hurting the cartels, or we're really hurting Iran, or we're really hurting China, they've got agents in place that can take our grid down and do 10 Metcalfs in one night. I mean, that nothing's off the table when we get into a really violent, dirty war.
You know, the other question.
The war in Northern Ireland, as far as it went, sniping, bombing, people still went to work. The grid never went down. Sometimes soldiers did a sweep that took 2 or 3 days, but it was rare. People still had jobs. People still drove to work. What I'm talking about, when we go after enemies in this league, they'll take our grid out. They'll take our grid out just as a diversion for something else.
Yeah,
they'll burn an entire city just as a diversion for something else, or to take pressure off another area, because they know we'll have to surge forces to one thing, leaving another unprotected.
That leads to an interesting question, because we've talked about this before, and that is, you know, the terrorist cells that, you know, with a bag of concrete can take out, you know, a train supply line. And if the military is going to start moving stuff quickly and they're loading up by trains, where's the OPSEC to make sure that the media doesn't know what we're moving where on what? And can we even trust them with that? Or are we going to see hundreds of thousands of media videos of, hello, look at the troops, they're rolling from here and they're rolling from there?
Yeah, you know, planes that are taking off and landing are low hanging fruit. And think about a denied area, like you know, in a threat environment, the kind of combat approach they have to corkscrew in, high angles, and that's because if you're just rolling out like, you know, Mr. 737, your engine is like a big fat target. Same thing with trains. Yeah. Trains are very easy targets. And if you have Antifa allied with, you know, the people that just hate America, although they'll just have to, like, you know, walk within a few miles of their house and monkey wrench train track switches. And that can just totally foobar our ability to move by train.
And they will too.
And then
it will align with the cartels.
And in this kind of a political environment, there'll be laws passed very fast that if you're caught monkey wrenching a train track, it's like we shoot you as a spy. Those U-boat kids that were dropped off in North Carolina and Long Beach or Long Island, we hanged them. We hung those kids, right? It was like, oh, you're 19, you're German, too bad, we're hanging you. You're here for sabotage. We hang you.
What if they look at this? I don't know. Listening to all of you guys, the thing that's occurring to me is, if we look at this from the opposite way, in a way, the one downside I see, like listening to all your points, Matt, which I think are excellent, is could this be part of the goal of like our enemies, the WEF and the globalists? I mean, if they get us going in some crazy war, with cartels, you know, it will be like a civil war in many aspects. And we have all these concerns of loyalty issues that we're talking about. I mean, could that be part of their design? The problem is I still think the war is worth it. I still think we need to exercise this cancer, but I just don't want us to step into a trap either.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think there's some kind of a chain of command where you put like, here's the WEF, you know, here's Antifa. I don't think there's a chain. I think it's much more like a Venn diagram of all kind of cartels and cabals that have overlapping interests.
Right.
And when their overlapping interests coincide, they'll work together without like a written treaty. They'll work together because it serves both their interests. But I think that if there is any kind of a pyramid at the top, there's a group of very evil people that want to see it all burn down.
Right.
That's like, you know, that's Satan and Lucifer. They would like to just see, you know, 7 of the 8 billion of us dead and our cities all in ruins. Right. That would like make them very happy. And, you know, as we've discussed, cities are extremely vulnerable. They're like that fish aquarium. They require the entire supply chain to function. You can't just put the supply chain on hold for a month. Manhattan, Los Angeles, we'll get back to you in a month. Just tighten your belt for a month. No food, no water. You'll be fine. Everything will turn it back on in a month. In a month, the fish in the aquarium are dead. So we can't just have a timeout. You know, even in the Ukrainian war, the Russians have not totally taken out the Ukrainian grid. They could if they wanted to. They've been taking out things that are more easily repairable because they don't want this war to be a 10-year, 20-year war. At a certain point, they haven't even blown up the bridges over the Dnieper. They could easily blow up the bridges over the Dnieper, and it would be much harder for the Ukrainians to send troops to the front and supplies. Why haven't they blown up the bridges over the Dnieper? Because they don't want to completely wreck the critical infrastructure of Ukraine. Now, the Ukrainians have tried to blow up the Crimea Bridge, haven't succeeded. But in looking at America, you know, Carlos Slim, he's one of the richest men in the world. He owns TracFone. He owns the New York Times, Mexican billionaire. I don't think he wants to see America reduced to rubble. He's out of business. You know, there's a level of tolerable destruction you can take where you're trying to force your enemies to surrender. You know, trying the cartels applying so much pressure to American politicians through kidnappings, terrorism, sabotaging water supply. You know, just as they can put fentanyl into a party drug, they can just as easily put it into Tylenol and have it on shelves all through America. You know, forget about the tamper-proof seal. That's a joke. They could have Tylenol bottles with fentanyl in it where people are afraid to buy anything at the supermarket because it could have fentanyl in it. That's how much stuff of that stuff is in this country. But they, you know, you don't want to kill the golden goose. You want to slap the golden goose around until it's marching to your tune. The problem is sometimes these things take on a life of their own and they become like a hurricane that keeps building. You know, the Beirut Civil War went for 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't put it out. It develops a war economy where people are making money off of feeding the Civil War. All the regular shops are gone, but there are still people, black market, selling arms, providing food for soldiers. That becomes an alternate economy. Kind of see that in Ukraine. These companies that are making a fortune selling missiles to Ukraine, they don't want the party to end. They're making tons of money.
Yep.
But you also don't want to see Ukraine annihilated to where it can never be rebuilt. So right now we're living the good life in America. We've got Trump. You know, he's doing stuff for the deportations and the border. He's not doing some stuff. He's allied with Mr. Transhumanist Larry Ellison and Oracle. He in that same speech, he came right out and said, I love H-1B. It's the only way to get good waiters. You know, the American waiters are shit is basically what he said. You want a really excellent maitre d' or wine expert or just a waiter. You know, you got to go overseas. He basically said that. You know, he basically said, fuck you, American. you're not good enough to be a waiter at my place. So he's not on their side everywhere, but you take what you can get.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I think, and we'll wrap this up in just a minute. The good thing about the Ellison, Altman, that press conference is, and I was wondering how long it was going to take Trump to have one of those awkward, sketchy, you know, press conferences. It was day two.
Yeah.
But there's been so much backlash against Sam Altman and against Larry Ellison. I doubt that that's going to move forward in any meaningful way. Because
nobody has seen Vivek in a while.
You know, he left. He's going to go run for governor.
That's the cover story. That's the cover story. But you think he's going to make governor after saying basically all you American Buckeyes are stupid slobs, except for my friend JD, you know, his third name. But so Vivek was just blasted off of X when he opened up that whole H-1B thing.
Yeah.
And a week into the H-1B thing, Musk, who had agreed with him and called us subtards, Musk tacked completely over to grooming gangs in the UK. He dropped H-1B like a hot potato, and it wasn't enough to just drop it. He had to set a counterfire so that nobody could even pick up the trail of the H-1B, and went all in on the grooming gangs in the UK.
Yeah.
So he knew H-1B was poison. Vivek didn't know it, and he's gone. He'll never be a governor of anything. That his enemies, his political rivals will just bring up his own quotes. Vivek thinks you're too stupid because you're just an American.
Oh, and you're too expensive too. I can get somebody twice as smart as you for, you know, $9 an hour. So
who works harder?
Yeah.
Who's willing to work 80 hours a week and have no house?
Yeah, that's what I think. Well, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, Matt, because I wasn't really. Go ahead. I'll make my point after you.
Yeah, I was going to say this brings up a really, really good point. And that is, we have to speak out, and we have to speak out in numbers, and we have to reach out to everybody that we know and tell them to speak out. Because we've seen, you know, instances like this H-1B where if we do speak out, you know, we can crush the opposition.
Yep.
But we have to do it.
It's powerful feedback.
Oh, I agree. That's been my strategy since Trump took office, right? Is every time something stupid comes out of the administration, you just hammer the shit out of them on social media because they're paying attention. He's totally paying attention to what the American people. And don't think for one second that he didn't pay attention when everybody went after Sam Altman and Larry Ellison the moment that press conference took place.
I think they all
won because that went viral.
Including Musk.
Oh, yeah. Well, Musk said that he said the exact same thing I did. If you keep this up, you're going to lose your base.
He said that $500 billion is bullshit. They don't have that.
Where are they going to come? Where's it going to come from?
Have you guys seen the polls that Tucker Carlson keeps posting on X? Like every day he's posting. Well, at least I think it's Tucker Carlson, but he constantly puts up links like, do you support this? Yes or no? And then there's a 10,000 yeses. And, you know, like, do you support declaring the you know, cartels an enemy of the country? Yes. And then there'll be I feel like he's using Tucker as like his polling system.
Well, and these polls,
absolutely.
The polls are definitely hitting CNN. MSNBC is for now just going to ride the woke train, you know, off the cliff, because I mean they're putting that the lesbian bishop, quote unquote, on constantly as like their big hero of the Democrats, the National Cathedral LGBTQ woke bishopess. CNN,
oh my goodness,
CNN
yes.
is not
yes.
CNN is trying to come back to the middle, and they were showing the polls. They're showing the polls on deportations. And like, wow, Americans are actually for Trump's immigration policy. Like, we better think about this.
Did you see the videos of both Trump and Vance and their families when that bishop was talking?
They should have rolled their eyes.
You could see, well, it wasn't rolling their eyes. There was absolute disdain.
They should have walked out. It was a huge missed opportunity.
They should have walked out.
If they had walked out, it would have been the absolute litmus test. Who's walking out with Trump and who's staying with the LGBTQ woke trans bishop.
Yeah.
That would have been perfect. Defining moment.
Yeah. I agree. He would have just been, sorry, we're not doing this. But I think that's
and,
a good
and
place
whoever did the advance work that didn't know, within an hour, all the videos of her wearing her N35 screaming about Trump at like Antifa rallies. Whoever didn't do the advance work should be fired, should have already been fired to encourage the others.
Well, there's a long list of people, Matt, that need to be fired from the administration, like the knucklehead that thought it was a good idea to do that press conference on day two with two of the biggest assholes on the planet. He should be fired. And you just go down the list, right? There's a whole host of people around him that need to be fired. But I think it's a good place to wrap up, because I think there's a number of different directions we could go. We could save it for later in the week when things really start kicking off, which I think we're pretty close to. Any final feedback on the cartels that we didn't talk through quickly? Because I want to keep this under an hour and a half.
Well, on the whole deportation, I think I haven't done this yet, but I've seen it online. You can get very good facsimile, like Border Patrol and ICE ball caps, and print and stick up those things everywhere, like in the men's room at Walmart, all about the, you know, La Migra Viene. you can do a lot of psyops, the power of millions of people with home printers, just sticking these things everywhere. Wear the ice ball cap everywhere.
Well, there was one meme that I think would be great to just print, you know, and it says, we have a plan to keep children with their families. You all go.
That's right. Absolutely.
I think is amazing that has come out this week that I didn't expect was, well, number one, Trump shutting down CBDCs was a huge thing that nobody's even talking about. But the other thing he did that I thought was very interesting was fire all the DEI across the government. Now they've rebranded some of the SESs. That's going to have a massive impact on this fight too.
And the letters came out saying that if you just try to rebrand within, you know, you've got to shut it down within 10 days. Otherwise you're going to be, you know, obstructing policy or whatever it is. And that'll be fireable. So you can't just change from Miss DEI to Miss Occupational Improvement.
They're going to try it, though. They will try it.
They will. But
a couple of that. They made them deputy directors.
But they're putting out the warning that camouflage does not count. Camouflage is going to be taken as obstruction, and that'll be fireable.
Is Bondi working on that? Is Bondi going to actually act on those?
She hasn't been confirmed yet. They're delaying her confirmation. That's the other thing they're doing, is they're delaying confirmation.
Well, they fired
they're playing the stupid game they did last time with him, which is we're going to debate every name for 12 hours.
Yes, but this doesn't work perfectly, you know, outside of a confirmation. But when you fire the head of the Bureau of Prisons, you fire the head of the Coast Guard, right? You're fired. Meaning you're still in the Coast Guard, but go home, take off your uniform, await retirement, further instructions. The next person in her position, and it's made clear it's because she was all about DEI and not protecting our coastlines. The next guy up gets the message loud and clear. Are you going to be like her and be fired tomorrow, or are you going to protect the coastline? You want to continue and be promoted? Protect the damn coastline throughout the DEI. Same thing with Bureau of Prisons. That guy was fired. Now, the next up in Bureau of Prisons doesn't always work. In the Secret Service, Cheatham gets fired, but the one that was really running it all along, according to Bongino, the second in command with the bullet head, the crew cut guy, he just became the acting, and he's like the worst guy ever. So it's not a perfect solution. But like firing the Coast Guard person, suddenly all the Coast Guard cutters are guarding the coast. You know,
they need to do that with FBI.
Same thing with justice.
They need to go through. They need to go through justice and the FBI with a blowtorch. They need to get rid of all the directors, all the field office, all the field office leaders.
Yeah, the entire top four of the FBI.
Oh, absolutely. You're calling. Absolutely.
When people, people don't understand what senior executive service is, and kind of on this program, on this channel, the people should know what SES is. When you consider that Peter Strzok was SES, that's a general. He was a general of the FBI, and he's from a family with these deep Eastern European connections, like multi-generational scumbag deep stater, right? Elitist. And that guy, that smirking POS, was SES. You know, we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And that the worst part about Strzok and Page and Chris Wray and that whole crew is that when Trump was pushed out of office in 20, they all got paid. All of them got paid. All that money needs to come back. You committed treason. You conspired against a sitting president.
Yeah, yeah.
You go to prison.
Yeah, well, Page and Strzok do one of these mutual circle jerk back scratch deals where I'll sue the Department of Justice and then you'll settle and give us a couple million each.
Yep, pay us out.
If they're doing that, every J6er should get a payout.
Oh,
100%. They already should get payouts.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway. They should relitigate
and
all that.
When they get together, the people in the D.C. gulag where they put them in the condemned cells below the sea level, you know, in the mildew, black mold cells on purpose. Those people should get a class action for deprivation of civil rights, cruel and unusual everything.
Don't forget that prosecutorial misconduct too, because there should be a good host of misconduct charges placed against all those federal prosecutors.
G.J. Rainier says, I have faith Kash Patel will do just that. I hope so. I have faith in him too, but I hope he gets confirmed and takes out the blowtorch.
Oh, yeah. They're going to do whatever they can to keep him out of office because they know once he gets in office, there's going to be justice for the January 6th stuff. And I would hope that Judas Pence gets held to account too.
Yeah, and I don't have the confidence that I think that Bondi's a strong choice. She wouldn't be my first choice. But Kash Patel with Pam Bondi backing him up, that will be very difficult for the deep state. I wouldn't be surprised to see more assassination attempts or the sudden headaches / cancer directed energy weapon directed against these people. You know, that's what you use these kind of weapons for.
Exactly. So you strap on a Prick 77 and you send them to the border and say, we want you to walk the border and find the holes in the fence.
Yeah, send them to Kodiak to count brown bears.
Absolutely. The other man, there's so many different ways to go. I'm just going to wrap. We'll just wrap here because we could go for another half an hour. First of all, gents, I appreciate you guys jumping on tonight. I think this was a good discussion. I think we still have 10 more different directions we can go with this. But my last bit to the audience is this. Be ready for anything because we don't know how this is going to, how this is going to grow and how this is going to go and what we're going to get out of this. Cause there's a host of directions this could go in all by itself organically without any input other than a nudge from the military at the border. And then it can be chaotic. So if you don't have, if you're not prepared for the grid to go down, you should be. You should be prepared for that anyway, given what happened in North Carolina, Maui, and in California, because that could happen to you in a moment's notice. So be ready for anything. Gents, final comments?
Yeah, what you just said reminded me, I would not be surprised to see the beginning of Sicario play out in several ways with the sudden appearance of cartel leaders at press conferences inside the United States where the black bag is taken off. And these people are we just went straight into your house, dude. And now you're in America. There's not many things they fear, but they don't like the idea of being inside of of the tombs, inside of a supermax where they have to pipe in light for the rest of their life, in the cell next to Kaczynski, in Kaczynski's old cell. That is, they don't fear much, but they don't like that idea. So that would be a trigger for them, because I think Trump would have the balls to do that. Send snatch teams right into Mexico and grab like five cartel leaders out. And the next thing you know, they're like showing the arrest press conference. They're in the orange jumpsuits, shackled and manacled.
That would be epic to watch that.
That would be epic, but it would probably just be the trigger.
Yeah.
It would kick off from there.
That'd be a big nudge right there.
Snatched right out. And I wouldn't be surprised if Trump has already had Eric Prince in there saying, Eric, how do we do this? How would you do it? If you wanted to capture the top five cartel guys, what would you do? Okay, Eric, what are you doing lately? How about you plan it?
Well, I was literally just going to say that because I was going to say that I would not put it past Trump to have already had a conversation with Eric Prince before he even went into office and asked him, how do we do this?
How do we do this?
And which contractors do we need to hire that can do this work off the books so it doesn't involve the military?
I watched the Sean Ryan interviews, both with Sarah Adams and Jane Doe, the non-American, supposedly Al-Qaeda expert. And I can't tell if he's being played or not. You know, they were both worth watching. And I've watched many Sean Ryan interviews. When I watched the interviews of Eric Prince with Sean Ryan, it's so obvious that Eric Prince is like seven intellectual levels above Sean Ryan. Eric Prince has to constantly explain stuff all the time. And he's got he's like a Victor Davis Hanson in terms of comparing a situation from Greece to the American Civil War to the Napoleonic Wars, and it's all right off the top of his head. So I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Prince has already been tapped for black bag jobs.
Not a year ago, 2 years ago, and he's been involved, you know, on the side ever since in a covert way. And I would also say that
consulting. Well,
absolutely, because I would also say so. My thoughts on the Sarah Adams interview and Jane Doe predictive programming, and I think Sean Ryan's being played.
Definitely,
because Sarah Adams. The only reason I listened to it was because of her conversation about funding Al-Qaeda. That's true. That's 100% true. Her narrative around 9/11 is right out of the agency talking
points. And she's got crazy eyes and a crazy giggle.
And she does. There's definitely crazy.
If you had a girlfriend like that, you'd run like hell.
Yeah. So that's all predictive programming. But I think when he interviewed Eric Prince, because Eric Prince was talking about privacy and phones and he was talking about censorship, and everything he said was spot on, absolutely spot on, because he talks about the censorship engine /machinery/industry that's been created through COVID and even before to censor people. Trump's not going to shut that shit off with an executive order. And that piece has to be dealt with before we take on the cartels. The cartels will have the Chinese backing to do information war, you know, information operations. And you can't underestimate their mastery.
And both sides will have top flight AI turbo boost on all of this electronic warfare and signal warfare.
Yep, they will. They absolutely will. And not to mention drones from China and Iran and everywhere else. And, you know, and I'm not forgetting the other foreign fighters that are in the country right now, because there's Syrians, there's Egyptians, there's, you name it, every nationality is here in the country in small cells. So they could use that as a target of opportunity.
One 20-foot cargo container could have 2,000 FPV drones, 2,000 AK-47s, you know, the combination package, and they can be dropped off anywhere and nobody looks twice.
Nope. They don't give it a second glance.
Or they can be just filled with TNT equivalent and parked in the middle of a giant shipping terminal. Detonate on command.
There's 100 different scenarios you can throw those into, and they're all applicable. So I'm gonna wrap this because we're at an hour and a half. Gents, I appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you.
We'll have to do this again soon because this was a good discussion. Last bit for the audience, be situationally aware. I'll be back on Monday with a sit rep. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
You're right. Well,